And that's just the perfect setup for Dr. Andrew Newberg, How God Changes Your Brain, breakthrough findings from a leading neuroscientist. It's a new field, neurotheology. We'll continue to explore that, this time with your help, next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So let's see, we'll just, if you promise to keep your questions or comments short, then we can have time to get everybody in here on Coast to Coast. We'll start with Michael in Toronto on a wild card line, How God Changes Your Brain, for Dr. Andrew Newberg. Michael?
Yes, good morning, Ian, and good morning to the guests as well. I guess the basic question is, why do we want to know if, you know, as human beings, if there's, you know, life after death, let's say heaven and hell and, you know, things like that? Because I suspect I know what the answer is, but, you know, some people, when they have their near-death experiences seem to, you know, change their religious outlook on life and think more spiritual after these experiences.
Yeah. Well, so what would be the problem with that?
Well, no, because it seems like the people before, going through an NDE don't appear to think very much about, spiritual matters, or about, you know, they want to live now.
All right. I think, and thank you, Michael. I think what Michael's hinting at here, actually, is some very interesting research we've talked about within the last year a couple of times on Coast to Coast. There's the doctor from Europe and then one from America that we're doing comprehensive studies on near-death experiences and how it changed people's beliefs from sometimes a more rigid traditional belief system to a wholly more spiritual, more right. open, you know, kind of thing. I think that's what he's getting. I don't know that it addresses to why do people want to know, but that was his first question. Why do you think people want to know what's at the core of this?
Well, I mean, I think that in general, as human beings, we strive to understand our world. We live in a world that appears rather capricious to us and is very unsettling. So the more we can get a sense of control, the more we can understand what's happening to us. And, of course, our fears of death are certainly up there on the top. So we like to know what happens to us and whether there is anything that's going to happen to us afterwards. And then certainly when you compound that with the kinds of experiences that people have had, it makes us wonder, is there something beyond just us, beyond just our physical body? And so many people have had experiences that suggest to them that there is, that's all part of what kind of fuels the overall interest in these kinds of questions. Now, to me, you know, again, a very interesting neurotheological question is the nature of near-death experiences. What do they actually mean? Do they literally represent the brain dying, or do they represent our souls moving on to some, you know, new domain or new spiritual realm? As the caller suggested, there is a lot of evidence to support how transformative they are. So clearly they change our brain, and clearly they change our brain in very powerful ways. The question is why and how, and many times people who are religious have those experiences. Sometimes people who are not religious have them. But they do tend to be uniformly powerful and uniformly transformative, and that's an important area for us to look at and to study more in the future.
Jay is in Compton, California, on a wild card line for Dr. Andrew Newberg, How God Changes Your Brain. Jay?
Yeah, listen, my God is better than your God, and that's it. Okay. My God, it's always been, this is the battle of the gods. But anyway, I think we need to change, make an amendment in the Constitution. And instead of, like, freedom of religion, we need to change that to freedom from religion.
Well, we already have that.
I'm talking about freedom from.
I heard you, but we already have that from a governmental standpoint. I mean, that's all you can ever ask for the Constitution, is that the government can't compel you to have a religion. So you already have it in the Constitution that you are guaranteed to be free from religion if you don't want to be a religious person.
Okay, so if I interpret it then that way, then that's cool, right?
I don't know why it wouldn't be. It sounds like you're trying to start a fight here, and we're not cooperating. What do you want us to do? Do you want us to get mad at you or what?
I have a question for you.
Okay, well, let's get to that then, because this isn't going so well. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The whole God thing to me just seems to be like a perception of one's own reality.
Okay. Wrong? Would that be wrong?
Well, I mean, certainly there is a perceptual component to it. There are the experiences that we have, and there are the ways in which we interpret our world and our reality. So, and some people interpret reality as having God, and some people interpret reality as not having God, which doesn't, you know, what we think inside doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what's out there in the real reality, and that is our ultimate kind of neurological conundrum of whether or not what we think inside is really commensurate with what is out there. And that's, you know, there's so much research that shows all the time how many mistakes our brains make all along in every way, shape, or form. So whether or not it's making a mistake from a religious or spiritual perspective, certainly it's possible, but it's going to be very difficult for us to ever really know who may actually have the real claim on what's reality.
Well, that's the interesting part about, to me, or sort of an ironic part of what Jay just said, because if I'm interpreting him right, and he sounds like he's on the agnostic to atheistic side, probably heavily planted in atheist, that the idea is so many atheists claim, in my experience, when I get emails or engage in conversation, is they claim to have a better perception of reality. Mm. They will say, yeah, but that's not real. And reality is such and such. And I think that goes directly to what you just said, that we can all have different perceptions of reality. The problem is when some people would say there is a reality, any one reality, and anything else is unreal.
Right.
Go ahead.
And I was going to say, I mean, what's always been a cornerstone of my research and my work and perspective on this is that if we assume that it's our brain that gives us our sense of reality and our perceptions on reality, all of us are in the same boat. All of us are processing millions of pieces of information that are out there, missing lots of pieces of information. The brain constructs for us its best guess as to what's out there, never bothers to tell us when it's made a mistake or not, and then we proceed as if we understand that reality. And that's true of everyone, religious or not. So all of us make lots of mistakes in terms of how we interpret and understand our world. And I think that, to me, what comes out of all of this research is not so much a rejection of one person's belief or another, but the appreciation that all of our brains are doing the best that they can at understanding the world and making some sort of sense out of it. And some of us do it in one way and some of us do it in another. And philosophically and biologically, we may never know where the real nature of reality lies. We may never be able to figure it out. I mean, this is why I pursue neurotheology, because I think that the only way to even get close to knowing it is to find some way of integrating the best of what we can know from science, the best we can know from our perceptual and spiritual perspectives and religious perspectives, our philosophical perspectives, and try to combine all of the abilities that we have together. If we reject one side or the other too quickly, we may miss completely what our reality is all about.
Right. Well, I think everybody is a person of faith. I think everybody puts their faith in something, whether it's science, whether it's whatever. It's just, and they don't see that. They think of themselves as having no faith, but they've just got it placed somewhere else. I'm sorry. Let me get into Ariel from Nashville, Tennessee, and we'll get back to that comment, I promise. Ariel?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. You're on a wild card line for Dr. Andrew Newberg, How God Changes Your Brain.
Yes, sir. How you doing? I want to give my opinion. I grew up in Central America. It's a very Catholic country.
Sure.
And thinking about Catholics, and one thing I thought outside the box, you know, we're all the same. And since then, you know, I've been like chosen for something. And everywhere I see a number 33 everywhere without even thinking about it. I just look here, I see a 33. A 33 over here, a 33 over there. It has to do with my daughter's birth and everything. And I think God has a purpose. I think that everything is God. I think like the Mayans, you know, everything, nature, stars, everything that has life is God. And I think we are just a thought of God. We are so small.
Okay, well, that's interesting. And so would Ariel's experience of always seeing a particular thing, like a 33, even if it's a totemic number like that, is that something that we can also see as informative to this discussion?
Well, absolutely. I mean, again, we have to divorce the question of the true nature of reality, which, you know, we may not be able to touch, with the notion of, so how does our brain, how does his brain look at that reality? Where does he find meaning, and how does he apply that ultimately to his life? And, there's lots of people who assign all kinds of meaning to the various things that happen to us. And again, that's what our brain does. It's trying to help us out. It's trying to help us to get through our lives. And if it works for him, and if he is a good person and a good, you know, spouse, parent, whatever, and doing the best to improve humanity, I think that's to some degree, what we need to look at. You know, what we ultimately do with all of this information. Are we trying to be compassionate and loving and helping each other out? Or are we trying to tear each other down? And I think that, you know, again, this is where we get back to how God changes our brain. And if we focus on those positive things, we focus on compassion, then it builds our brain, it strengthens our mind, and it strengthens our behaviors and our societies. And if we look towards the destructive, hateful, angerful perspectives, then that leads to a destructive qualities in our brain and in our society.
Justin is in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, east of the Rockies, on Coast to Coast for Dr. Andrew Newberg. Justin?
Hi, yeah. I was curious if you've done any research on the psychedelics, which is like psilocybin mushrooms.
It's a very interesting question. I personally have not. That's a whole other area of research that I think is ultimately very important, because one of the things that we know about these different drugs and the effects that they have on us, we can see the chemical effects. We can see where they go in the brain, what receptors they activate, and we can try to compare the experiences that people have under the influence of these different drugs with the spiritual experiences. How similar are they? How different are they? Does it help us to understand better whether they are, you know, real experiences? Do they open up our mind to another reality? As many people have that experience, and what does that mean? And it gets back to the whole, you know, reality question. If a shaman takes a drug to get into the spiritual realm, he doesn't view that as artificial. In our Western society, we say, "Oh, well, he took the drug created it. It's an artificial experience." For the person who does it to get into a spiritual realm, it's very real, and it's just a way of opening up that window for us as human beings to access a different form of reality, a different aspect of reality that we don't normally have access to. It doesn't necessarily diminish either aspect of reality, and that's an important philosophical point.
Hey, Jesse, I don't know, who's the one that's holding on longest on the wild card lines? Let's get to Jeff in Houston on Coast to Coast for Dr. Andrew Newberg. Sorry about leaving you on there for a while, Jeff.
Hey, no problem, man. Good morning, world and fellas. Hey, I just wanted to make a real quick comment and ask a question. First, I wanted to say Edgar Cayce actually predicted the whole Japanese tsunami thing, and I was curious if the doctor has done any research on Edgar Cayce and the brain and God.
Edgar Cayce and the brain. Yeah, I understand. I don't know quite how you would do that, but...
you mean in terms of being able to predict things, or...
Well, I don't know, because you couldn't have ever have met him or been able to do any research on him. Can I ask you, though, have you done much work with people who are prophets or self-proclaimed prophets to be able to predict future events or to have a greater connection with God, that they can speak for God?
Right. Right. Now, you know, the closest we've come to that, actually, is we had an interesting ability to study some Brazilian mediums who don't necessarily you know, predict the future per se, but have claimed to be able to have access to the spiritual realm and to be able to respond to the spiritual realm. And one of the things that we found, we actually scanned their brains when they were in this medium state, and one of the areas of the brain that actually shuts down during that state is the frontal lobes. And these are an area of the brain that, normally help us to keep our mind focused and help us with our own sense of consciousness and willfulness. And it's when this area shuts down, the experience that people have is this sense of being taken over, having their conscious being taken over, controlled by whatever, however you describe it, by something outside or something else. So it's consistent with the experience that they have. Whether or not they are truly in touch with those spirits or not is, again, you know, the bigger philosophical question. But it does seem that when people, that there are ways in which people kind of engage in these kinds of interesting thought processes that may give them new perspectives, feel like they're touching another realm, maybe even predict the future, that may have something to do with those frontal lobes, the ways in which we kind of control and regulate the ways in which we look at our world and think about our world.
I was just looking up to see what Edgar Cayce had to say about Japan, and I haven't been able to find that yet, but I'll get to that in the break here coming up at the bottom of the hour. Jerry in West Virginia, first-time caller on Coast to Coast, and we've got a Skype line hanging on too. Jerry?
Yeah, how you guys doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
Jerry?
Yep, we lose him?
I think we lost him. Sorry about that. Well, let's go to John in Oklahoma City on Coast to Coast for Dr. Andrew Newberg. John?
Yes, happy to talk to you. I'm a first-time caller. I thought Skype was the only way I could get through. First of all, I'm very grateful to your radio show because I'm reading Dr. Newberg's book after hearing about it on Coast to Coast from Dr. Perlmutter. And it's fascinating for three reasons. I'm a trained theologian, and I'm in training now to be a counseling psychologist, but I'm also a lifelong depression and anxiety sufferer. And I'm very interested in what Dr. Perlmutter called healing the pathways of the brain. Mm-hmm. And I had some stressful experiences over Christmas, and I was determined that I was going to find some healing for my brain, and I would say providentially made these discoveries. So Dr. Holloway, who...
We're going to have to get to a question here, John, I'm afraid, because we're just coming up at the bottom of the hour. So did you have a specific question for Dr. Newberg?
Yes. Could you speak about healing the brain from emotional trauma? Say if somebody gets bad news and they have a physical sensation of a tingling burning going down their scalp through their whole body.
All right. That's an interesting question.
I'll say a couple things. First of all,
got to be quick here. Go ahead.
I'll be brief. First of all, you know, for those people who are interested in some of the more theological discussions, my book Principles of Neurotheology might be very useful for them. But as far as the emotions go, you know, certainly the brain can heal itself, and the question is, how do we go about best healing the brain? And for the most part, I think we have to take a very integrated approach, and that includes things like cognitive therapy, psychotherapy, different types of approaches to help people improve the way they think about things. It includes things like diet. You know, so oftentimes we forget that what we eat really has a very big impact on who we are and how we think. And
you're going to have to hang on to the rest of that thought here because we're to the bottom of the hour, but we'll get more coming up next on Coast to Coast. Well, if it hasn't happened to you yet, it will. The madness of daylight savings time. Hey, it's just a jump to the left. So we'll get back to your calls coming up in just a moment for Dr. Andrew Newberg. I looked up the Edgar Cayce thing here, so let me tell you what Edgar Cayce actually said. As a previous caller said, Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, as he is known by his fans, predicted Japan. I can only find one prediction for Japan. But there has been some discussion about whether or not this is the fulfillment of an Edgar Cayce prediction. He said that by the end of the century, New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco would all be destroyed. He said that the greater portion of Japan must go into the sea at this time, and that Northern Europe would be changed as in the twinkling of an eye. I just don't, obviously, New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco have not been destroyed. And the greater portion of Japan did not go into the sea. In fact, I don't know that any portion of it went into the sea, although a certain amount of the sea came into a portion of Japan, that's for sure. But you know, then again, maybe, and I'm just saying maybe, is there just a coincidence that there was a tsunami onto a part of Japan on the same weekend that there was a battle for the soul of Los Angeles, at least in the movies? The battle for LA opening up this weekend, tie-in? No? Oh, I don't know. Anyway, that's all I can find about a prediction about Japan from Edgar Cayce. There might have been more. We'll get back to your calls, your comments, your questions for Dr. Andrew Neuberg, How God Changes Your Brain, next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. Ken is in Chula Vista, California, to get us restarted here for this half hour of questions and comments for Dr. Andrew Neuberg. Ken?
Yes, I'm here. Hello, Ian and Dr. Neuberg. It's a great show tonight. I would like to make 2 points and then have Dr. Neuberg comment on them, if he would. The first one is concerning the notion that Ian just expressed concerning atheism being actually a form of religion. This would actually fit in well with the evolutionary determinism often expressed by atheists and agnostics in an attempt to justify what would be otherwise an intellectually vapid position. Since you cannot establish by any logical, philosophical, or empirical scientific means the non-existence of a divine entity. And the second point concerns Matthew Alpert's position.
Alper,
right. Yeah. That somehow the possession of an organ of perception disproves the reality of the physical existence of the perceived. I find this to be wholly intellectually and logically impoverished. The fact that there might be organs or mechanisms in the brain for perceiving the divine in no way is a statement of the non-existence of the divine.
Right.
Even if you're an evolutionist, that again would lead to an equally valid argument for God based on evolutionary determinism. So I just can't see the materialists of the world attempting to be justified in this position.
Dr. Neuberg?
I do agree with a lot of what the caller just said. I think that while to some degree we can never really know whether there is or is not a God, but that then implies that that somebody who is claiming clearly that there is no God is really not any more accurate than somebody who's claiming clearly that there is. So I think he's right that without really being able to know for sure, we have to be very cautious about what kind of conclusions we draw from whatever research or ideas that we have. And to me, this is one of the critical elements, I think, that neurotheology as a field should have is a sense of openness and a sense of willingness to look at all the different possibilities before we write anything off, because if we do it too quickly, we may very well miss some very important pieces of information that we are not aware of today, but maybe will be some point down the road. And similarly, I would agree that the fact that we have the ability to perceive God, or that we have the ability to think about these things, that there's a biological component to that, to me speaks to the importance of it in our lives and the importance of it in the ways human beings have lived over the centuries and millennia, I don't think in any way, shape, or form it negates that belief as being a possibility. And just and as I think the caller was kind of alluding to, that you know, somebody who's religious may make just the opposite argument and say, well, you know, certainly the fact that it's in our brain and our brain has the ability to perceive God implies that there is a God, that there is a way that, you know, it would make sense that God would put a part of some kind of biological mechanism by which we can understand and conceive of God inside of us. And again, it may be that there is no God, but I think that until we really are sure, we have to keep ourselves open to the different possibilities and look at both what science as well as the religious and spiritual perspectives have to say, and find our best way of integrating those approaches to get to as close as possible the answers that the answers to those kinds of questions.
And so then the proposal is it possible that some people can't do God just like some people can't do math? Let's do Bob in Iowa, a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Bob?
Hey, thanks a lot, Ian. Doctor, I heard someone mention earlier about studying the Buddhist in Tibet.
Yes.
And the brain waves and things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm curious, hopefully in one of your books, you've got something about what I am, which is a Zen Buddhist, which is completely different, as you probably know, than Tibetan Buddhism. But Zen Buddhists, they believe, like Jesus said, the kingdom is within. Now, these guys, they practice a particular form of meditation called Zazen. And,
right,
and the purpose of this is to, maybe you can tell me.
You know, go ahead, because I know that there's been some interesting work with chants and with different prayer forms in the book, How God Changes Your Brain. Dr. Newberg?
Well, sure. I mean, again, you know, all the different perspectives, all the different practices do slightly or even greatly different things to us, and the different approaches in Buddhism, Zen Buddhism, Tibetan, and so forth, different sects of Christianity and so forth. They all can affect ourselves differently, and as the caller alluded to, when you look at how the particular practices in Zen, we have not specifically studied them myself, but the different kinds of changes that occur, the ability to kind of open the mind up and so forth to a variety of different states and experiences, clearly there are going to be biological things going on. And I think it would ultimately be wonderful and helpful to study them. On the other hand, you know, we still get back to our kind of neurotheological conundrum of the reality of them and whether or not that perspective on reality is better or worse than other perspectives. It certainly is different, and I think, you know, we need to do our best to try to understand as best as possible where those differences actually come from and how they are manifested within us.
James is in Memphis, Tennessee, on Coast to Coast. James?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. You're talking with Dr. Newberg. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling because, like, you know, I'm hearing some, like, really weird perceptions of things is what it sounds like, and that's kind of why I was calling. There was a study done in Sweden, I was just reading about it, that if you damage a certain part of the brain, you're more likely to perceive things. And as far as religion is concerned, you're more likely to want to follow a religious outline, I guess you could say. I'm not really a religious person myself. I'm more agnostic than anything, and I don't really discount or, you know, disassociate myself with religion entirely. But I think that a lot of this has to do with perception. And
okay,
you know, you're talking
we've been talking about that a lot tonight. So yeah, I know you got a specific question for the doctor on how to address that particular interest about perception, because that's something that's a theme we've been hitting for a while here. So was there a particular question about that?
Well, I'm hearing it a lot, and like I said, the word, it's coming out a lot, and also, like I said, I read that study about the damaging to the brain.
Well,
and
we
I was
talked
just
about
wondering.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering if he had done any further looking into the likelihood of that being a fact instead of just, you know, an idea that they're working on.
That's what pretty much the whole book is about here, James. But go ahead. I'll leave that up to Dr. Newberg about that study.
We have been doing a great deal of studies, both in terms of the subjective nature of the perceptions that people have and how people interpret them, as well as what those changes ultimately do to us. You know, and just to kind of come back, you know, full circle to this topic of the reality and what happens to the brain when we experience different things. You know, he brought up the head injury case. You know, if somebody has a head injury and then they become a more spiritual person, the question that we ultimately have is were there parts of their brain that were preventing them from becoming more spiritual, or are there parts of the brain now that simply became more spiritual, and whether or not they are now looking at the world in a more accurate way or a more inaccurate way. And, you know, the jury's out. That's part of what this research is all about, trying to figure that out and trying to elaborate more on how our perceptions and our biology and the realness of reality actually comes about.
Dennis is in Doris Lake, Tennessee, on Coast to Coast for Dr. Andrew Newberg. Dennis?
Good morning, Dr. Newberg. Ann, how are you guys today?
Good morning. Good.
Well, I was raised Catholic. Taught about God, and I have faith that God existed. I had a career in science, and I believe that modern science probably does pretty well to demonstrate that there's something of creation involved to do with us and what we perceive as the reality around us. My question would be, what do you guys think is the proclivity that we want to worship our creator? As we talk about creation, we usually use the word God. And I guess I would be correct to say that God would be an entity that we would respect or worship or would expect something from us, as opposed to simply a creator. And so that's my big question today. There's something, I believe, higher than us out there, and as okay. someone who's in science. And if I could have a quick question for Dr. Newberg.
Okay.
In your brain studies, what type of imaging do you use? Do you use it all, fMRI, PET?
Okay. All right.
Let me answer that question first. Yes, we've actually used all the different types of imaging. We've used functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI. We have used positron emission tomography, or PET imaging, and SPECT imaging, single photon emission computed tomography, all looking at different ways of how the brain works. And in fact, you know, a big area for us to study are all the different physiological processes that go on in the brain that we now have an opportunity to study. So there's a lot of exciting things that'll be coming down the road. As far as worshiping a creator, you know, I guess as we see in a lot of different perspectives on religion and spirituality, sometimes it's a feeling of gratitude that somebody put us here, and we appreciate that. Sometimes it is to help us. We figure, well, if they created it, then they can help us through it, and they can help us control the world in certain ways that help us to survive better and to do better. And I guess we appreciate that. And I guess to some degree, it also reflects ultimately kind of a self-transcendent approach, that we can become something greater than who we are and connect with this something that's greater than ourselves. And so I think there's a lot of good reasons why people feel a need to connect with that creator. You know, assuming that there is one.
I look at it like with my kids. I helped to create them. I don't expect them to worship me, but I, you know, a card on Father's Day is nice. You know, I think maybe there's something correlative about that. Alex is in Wichita, Kansas, on Coast to Coast. Alex?
Hi, Ian. I had a question about what usually affects people, like when they're meditating and then have a God experience.
What usually happens, you mean, you said?
Well, okay, when I was about five, I was meditating, didn't realize it was meditation, and wasn't even trying to have a God contact, but that was kind of the result. And my parents assumed that I probably had a temporal lobe seizure.
Huh.
Yeah. Well, that's possible. You know, the part of the problem is that it's extremely hard to capture that moment when somebody has that experience. And of course, when they're having that experience, you can't tap them on the shoulder and say, "Are you having it yet?"
Right.
But I think what the data show at the moment is that there are some very substantial changes that go on in the brain, areas of the brain, as we've talked about, that relate to our emotions and our perception of ourself and even our perceptions of the realness of something that turn on. And maybe it's a seizure, maybe it's God talking to us, maybe it's some other process, but all of them obviously can have a very profound influence on how our brain works and how we think about our world after that.
Jane is in Dallas, Texas, on Coast to Coast. Jane, you're talking with Dr. Andrew Newberg. You'll probably be our last caller on this. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm glad to get on. The last two callers stole what I was going to ask and what I was going to say. But basically, I was just going to say to atheists, you know, you're surrounded by creation, so logically there must be a creator. And then quantum physics says that the observer affects the observed. And you already answered the question about what types of tests you use or what kind of imaging you use to look at the brain. But
then, Jane, I'm going to get it.
What about out-of-body experiences?
What about out-of-body experiences then?
Well, you know, the out-of-body experiences appear to have also something to do with that parietal lobe, the part that helps us establish our sense of self and where our body is in space and time. And, you know, but whether, I mean, that's the physiological element of it, but whether or not you actually can leave your body and you know, go other places and see other things, there's a lot of anecdotes that support that can happen, but whether or not it really does or not, you know, that's still, again, the big question. And to me, the thing that really drives this whole field of research is the unknowing and being comfortable with that. And I think that that's an important part of this whole thing.
As it turns out, then we'll have time for one more question. Jason is in Corning, California, on Coast to Coast. Jason?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say, Ian, I actually dated, back in college, I dated an agnostic, and she just kept saying, maybe.
That's a better joke.
My question is to the doctor, what about religious stigmatics and what's going on neurologically? Have we ever looked at that or just what on that? So thank you.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question when the worship experience becomes stigmatic. Yeah, and it comes out of their hand or their eyes or...
I mean, again, you know, certainly there could be a religious explanation. Physiologically, it's tough, although it's amazing how much the brain can regulate our body and how our body works and how things appear on our skin and all the different things, you know, the placebo effect. Our brain is awfully powerful, and when we start to have different ideas and different thoughts, it's amazing what it might be able to do, and I wouldn't exclude anything in terms of how those types of experiences and what those kinds of things may begin to look like and how they may affect people. There may be so many different things that we just don't know about yet. So, lots for us to learn about.
Yes, and that just means more books for you to write, Dr. Andrew Newberg. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed the experience.
I did. Thank you so much for having me on your program.
We'd love to have you back again. How God Changes Your Brain. Keep that fascinating research coming through. And keep thinking about that, about the folks in Japan, too. They got a long road to hoe on this one. And I'm afraid, too, the worst of it probably hasn't even happened yet with another explosion coming at that nuclear station. Hopefully the worst of it is behind them. In the meantime, 1-800-RED-CROSS if you can. Deus te amat. And I do too.